Good morning. I'd like to welcome you to the Second Court of Appeals. It's good to see you here today. Before we begin, as I understand it, the attorneys have checked in and they're ready. Before I begin, I'll introduce the panel to you. To my right is Justice Wade Birdwell, and to my left is Justice Mike Wallach, and I'm Bonnie Sutterth. I'm the Chief Justice of the Court. Would the clerk please call the case? You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may please the court. Very happy to be here today. My name is Joe Cleveland. I represent the appellants, Giant Resources LP and Michael Gutierrez, who are doing business as a joint venture. This is an oil and gas case involving a single cause of action for quantum merit. At the time here today, I would like to address two points relating to the statute of frauds defense, the only defense the appellees prevailed on at summary judgment. First, the appellees failed to meet their initial burden of establishing the applicability of the statute of frauds to the joint venture's quantum merit claim. And second, the joint venture's damages consisting of the reasonable and customary per acre brokerage fee cannot be characterized as a benefit of the bargain damages, and therefore the statute of frauds does not apply. So before I get started on the argument, I'd like to kind of set up the way the Supreme Court asks or instructs the counsel and courts to look at this issue. In Diner G versus Yates, the Texas Supreme Court set out the burden-shifting regimen for establishing the statute of frauds defense. The court said the party pleading the statute of frauds, in this case, Lone Star, bears the initial burden of establishing its applicability. And once that party meets its additional burden, then the burden shifts to the opposing party to establish an exception that would take the verbal, quote, verbal contract, close quote, out of the statute of frauds. Now, the Supreme Court's use of that phrase, verbal contract, is intentional and important. That's because the statute of frauds requires that certain classes of contracts must be in writing to be enforceable, including a promise or an agreement to pay a commission for the sale or purchase of oil and gas leases, royalties, or mineral interest. So according to the express terms of the statute and the Supreme Court's interpretation of that statute, the statute of frauds only applies to verbal promises or agreements to pay a commission for the sale or purchase of oil, gas, or mineral interest. And it's undisputed in this record that there was no oral agreement or promise to pay a commission on any oil and gas transaction. Therefore, Lone Star has failed to meet its initial burden to prove the applicability of the statute of frauds in this case. In fact, there is no pleading or proof of any promise, oral promise, or agreement to do anything. Lone Star cites a number of cases, but all the cases Lone Star relies upon are all distinguishable because they're all based on some oral or otherwise unenforceable agreement or promise explicitly barred by the statute of frauds. Now that makes sense because the statute of frauds originally adopted by the English Parliament in 1677 required that certain types of contracts, land conveyances, and other transactions had to be in writing and signed by the party to be charged. The purpose of the statute of frauds was to prevent fraud and to ensure a person could not falsely claim on the basis of perjured oral testimony that an oral agreement existed when it did not, hence the name the statute of frauds. Lone Star's sweeping claim that the statute of fraud generally applies to all non-contract clauses of action, regardless of whether or not an oral promise or agreement even exists, cannot be the law. Lone Star's interpretation is contrary to basic statutory construction. The basic rules of statutory construction, as we all know, require courts to read the statute as a whole and not construe the statute in such a way as to render the words in the text useless or a nullity.
What is the basis, then, of the obligation you're seeking to enforce under quantum merit if it's not a verbal agreement?
It's based on the benefits and services were conferred upon Lone Star.
Okay, so somebody can just do something and, hey, I benefited you, so therefore you're obligated to pay that.
That's an equitable.
There's nothing. So I can literally go mow my neighbor's yard without asking them, without any pre-understanding or obligation. I can go mow my neighbor's yard and then ask them to pay me for it.
Well, one of the elements of the statute of frauds is they have to be on notice that the other party expects to be paid.
In that regard, if your client performed services before it sent the email saying, are you interested in this, why are they not volunteers?
Because in the past, based on the past business relationship between Lone Star and Giant Resources, Lone Star had paid a brokerage fee on a per acre price of $16.75 per acre. Not a volunteer. They're not out there doing this for the fun of it. They're not doing it just to, this is their business.
Doesn't the contract say that neither party has an obligation under the non-disclosure agreement unless there's a subsequent agreement to that?
That's true. That's why we do not sue for a breach of contract.
So why do you have a reasonable expectation that if you go do something that you're going to get paid for it if there's no obligation to actually carry through with it?
We're not suing for breach of contract. We're suing for quantum merit, which requires that if benefits are conferred upon or services are provided to a party and the party use those to their benefit and it's inequity, it would be unjust for the other side not to be compensated for those goods or services provided. So it's a standard quantum merit case. I confess it is unique in this situation because I've not found a case, and neither has the opposing counsel found a case applying it specifically to this type of transaction. But it's typical, and you know, you could read the cases. They apply it in attorney's fees cases where there is not an enforceable written contract, and that's in the Hill case, Hill versus Shamoon. Where the lawyers provided services under oral contingency fee agreement or an understanding, and the Texas Supreme Court said, well, the parties admitted that contract was barred by the statute of frauds because it was not in writing, but the court still allowed the attorneys to recover quantum merit.
I didn't see in the record, and maybe I dismissed it, but when did your client perform all of the services that they claim to have performed?
Before May of 2015.
And so the notice requirement is satisfied just by the prior dealings between the parties?
That's one of the evidence in support of the notice requirement. The other is there was a confidentiality agreement, which was basically an invitation to bring deals to Lone Star.
Well, the email is right now, the email is the service, correct, that you're expecting to be provided for, because it's the information in the email that is the basis for the quantum merit claim. The availability of the leases and the readiness of the landowners to pay, and that information is conveyed in the email, but that email specifically references a written agreement and says this is the Exhibit A to that written agreement.
Right, the email was a culmination of all the work that had been done to get to that point, to provide them that information in that context. But in the email, you're correct, Your Honor, the email was intended to be attached as Exhibit A if they ever decided to go forward with a formal contract, which they did not. And that was communicated to my client. They said, we're not interested. This property, we've already looked at this. The formation is too shallow. It's too far north, not interested. Right after that confidentiality agreement expired, they went around Giant Resources and leased it up directly from the landowners. So I think the point of the matter is that if you look at the statute of frauds, Lone Star's interpretation would erase that provision that requires a verbal promise or agreement for it to even apply, and would read that provision right out of the statute. In addition, Texas courts uniformly hold that the statute of frauds does not bar quantum merit claims. Now, to recover damages under a non-contract claim, it can be barred only if a party is seeking benefit of the bargain damages based on an oral agreement barred by the statute of frauds. And the leading case on this, as I mentioned earlier, was the Hill versus Shamood case, which is an attorney's fees case involving, as I indicated earlier, an unenforceable contingent fee contract. And the court said whether the statute of frauds bars recovery for a non-contract claim depends on the nature of the damages plaintiffs seek to recover. And that goes, it brings up my second point. In this case, the joint venture is only seeking the reasonable and customary value of the goods and services provided to Lone Star and not benefit of bargain damages based on some unenforceable verbal agreement. The joint venture is seeking the reasonable value of its compensable work for aiding in the sale of a mineral interest at the time and place where the work was performed. The joint venture is seeking the reasonable customary per acre brokerage fee based on undisputed evidence of what brokers were charging in that area in 2015. The joint venture is not seeking benefit of the bargain damages consisting of an acreage price of $1,875 per acre that Lone Star paid Giant Resources 6 months before this transaction was presented to them, or this offer was presented to them. The joint venture is not seeking the net profits of $775 per acre that Giant Resources earned in that previous transaction with Lone Star. The joint venture is not seeking a commission or percentage of production or overriding royalty interest. They're not seeking some contingent fee based on the some happening of some uncertain event in the future. They're not seeking to have a continuing business relationship with Lone Star. And they're not seeking damages based on a transaction that never occurred or the benefit of any bargain it hoped to get with Lone Star. Instead,
what is the evidence on the record that Giant actually engaged Gutierrez effectively on behalf of Lone Star and entered into the joint venture with regard to this acreage effectively under the confidentiality agreement?
There's testimony in the record from both Mark Taylor and Mr. Gutierrez that once the lease, the landowners were signed up on an agency agreement, that Mr. Gutierrez approached Mr. Taylor and his company, Giant Resources, about entering into a joint venture to go in and promote this property that they had to other producers in Texas to see if they might be interested in leasing this property. So that's the evidence in the record, Your Honor.
But that's other producers, plural.
Well, yeah, including Lone Star.
That's not Giant saying, I need to enter into a joint venture with you, Gutierrez, with regard to these because we like what we see here, and we've got this agreement with Lone Star. So that doesn't appear in the joint venture, does it? There's nothing in the joint venture documents that indicates that Giant is entering into it as effectively an agent for Lone Star with regard to that. In fact, they don't even tell Lone Star about it.
Right. And the bottom line is that there is no joint venture agreement. There's no written agreement. It's an oral agreement between these two gentlemen that have been working with each other on other joint ventures for many years.
Your briefing literally refers to Lone Star as a part of the joint venture.
No,
with Gutierrez.
That's not correct.
Okay, I misunderstood.
That's not correct.
Then.
No, the joint venture was between Gutierrez and Giant Resources. And that's a joint venture that they did on a project-by-project basis. Once they had this land secured, they entered into this joint venture and then promoted the prospects of leasing this to various oil and gas firms, including Lone Star. So the Giant Resources is in the joint venture is merely seeking a cash-based compensation for its services and valuable materials provided, calculated as a flat per acre brokerage fee based on the reasonable and customary fees charged by brokers in that area in 2015. And I see that I have a short amount of time remaining. I'd like to quickly address the handout that Mr. Barton is going to address. On tab two, he says that appellants admit that they seek benefit of the bargain damages. And again, I concede that if we were seeking benefit of bargain damages, it would be barred by the statute of frauds. So I think the question of court is, what kind of damages are we seeking here? The benefit of the bargain damages would be, for example, the last transaction that Lone Star had with Giant Resources where they paid $1,275 per acre. That's a benefit of the bargain damages. In this case, they're not seeking that amount. They're not seeking the net profits from that earlier bargain for amount. There was no bargain. There was no discussion about any bargain for amount. So there was no contract. So in this tab two, he said that the plaintiffs admit that they seek benefit of the bargain damages based on request number 53. It says, admit the plaintiff's claim for damages under quantum merit is based on a brokerage fee plaintiff would have generated from assigning a lease or leases of the 1,500 acres to one or more of the defendants. Well, that's, it has, the quantum merit has to be tied to something. So that's like saying that the plaintiff's claim for damages, if it was a painter, under quantum merit, is based on compensation the painter would have generated from painting the house. So again, it has to be tied to some activity. So we admitted that, we appropriately admitted that, but we've never admitted that we're seeking benefit of the bargain damages.
Just one, I want to clarify this. You're essentially saying that the quantum merit obviously is not based upon any written contract, so it's not based upon the confidentiality agreement.
That's correct.
And it's not based upon a verbal agreement. It's based upon this concept of a course of dealing, previous course of dealing between the parties, which effectively the confidentiality agreement does not intervene in with regard to that course of dealing.
That's correct, because the confidentiality agreement was designed to protect the exchange of confidential information only. That's it. It didn't say anything about the services that were going to be provided or the materials provided. It contemplated that there might be services and materials provided and attached as exhibit, but it did not specify in that agreement exactly what was going to be done. Therefore, that there's no bar to the quantum merit claim because due to the express contract rule that says if there's an express contract that covers the quantum merit claim, that the quantum merit claim is barred.
Then the contract says that there's no obligations to do anything unless there's a subsequent agreement.
That's correct.
Why does that not negate the issue of payment for your services if, in fact, there's no subsequent agreement?
Because it says under this transaction, and the transaction is defined as an oil and gas transaction that's presented to them under that agreement. And again, the quantum merit claim is not expressly barred by that contract because there is no right under that contract for Giant Resources to sue for breach if they use that material. There's no right. So that's the reason the express contract rule doesn't apply. I see my time is up. So thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Would you add 2 minutes to Mr. Barton's time?
May it please the court. Appellants seek to recover indirectly through quantum merit what they cannot recover directly under the statute of frauds. They can't have their cake and eat it too. The judgment should be affirmed for four reasons that I'd like to discuss today. First, appellants' only measure of quantum merit damages, benefit of the bargain damages, are barred by the statute of frauds. Counsel just told you that if they are seeking benefit of the bargain damages, then it would be barred by the statute of frauds. And that's exactly what happened. Second point, Giant provided the email and Google map to Lone Star pursuant to an existing written contract. That negates a quantum merit claim. Third, an expectation of a future transaction or business opportunity cannot form the basis of a quantum merit claim. Lastly, time permitting, appellant's quantum merit claim, which is founded in unjust enrichment, is barred by the 2-year statute of limitations. And I've provided a handout to the court and will refer to it in discussing these points. Turning to the first point, appellant's only measure of quantum merit damages is barred by the statute of frauds. Giant sent Lone Star a five-sentence email and a Google map of an area in Gonzales County, and that's shown under tab one of the handout. And last sentence of the email, Giant, Mr. Taylor said, let me know if you're interested. 2 days later, Lone Star replied that it had already looked at that property and it wasn't interested. No transaction happened, and appellants did nothing further. But they seek over $450,000 for sending the email and the map. Those damages are based on the benefit of a non-existent bargain and are barred by the statute of frauds.
Just for clarification, so there's a Google map that shows lease availability?
It,
or is that information that was added on top of the Google map?
It has, I think this map has little pins that purport to show maybe units or wells. I'm not sure.
Well, I know. I mean, when I hit a map on my iPhone, it'll show me a McDonald's or something like that if I get down there. But that's kind of my question is there a specific function of Google that provides information in this form without manipulation?
Yeah, Your Honor, yeah, I misunderstood. They may have been able to go in and add the pins. I don't know how.
But adding the pins would be the confidential information. It's just not simply a Google map. It's a Google map with added information onto it. But
right.
We don't have anything in the record one way or the other.
That's correct. And we'll discuss in shortly the fact that it was publicly available information.
Well, that's kind of my point. Is this a Google map that Lone Star could have pulled up without the assistance of Giant, or is this a Google map that Giant had the benefit of or added to, which actually is the value that they're suing for?
Yep. I don't know. The record doesn't indicate what Google Earth's functions are, and I don't know. But fundamentally, their admissions prove that they're seeking benefit of the bargain damages. And under tab two, as counsel just talked about, under the first bullet point, they admit that their claim for damages under quantum merit is based on the brokerage fee that they would have generated from assigning a lease or leases to the defendants. That admission is conclusive. Seeking a brokerage fee that they would have generated, that is an expectancy benefit of the bargain damage.
How is that different from the guy who mows the lawn and says, well, I would have received $15 for mowing the lawn? But is that an expectancy? Is that a benefit of the bargain, or is that quantum merit?
The difference is quantum merit, the measure of damage, is the value of the services. Benefit of the bargain.
So the fact that it's a percentage fee defeats the fact that it's the actual value. That it's some kind of estimate or some kind of.
Right. Well, a gross profit brokerage fee, which is what they are seeking, by definition, is earned by completing a transaction in which Giant would buy leases, turn around and sell leases to a third party for a higher price. That's what the second bullet point on tab two shows. That's what they expected in sending the email to Lone Star. The third bullet point, Mr. Taylor testified that shortly before sending the email, Giant was earning an average gross profit brokerage fee for completed transactions of $637.50 an acre. Under the fourth bullet point, that is exactly the amount that they're claiming is damage. They're seeking the benefit of a hoped-for bargain, that's benefit of the bargain damages. And they're barred. And let me just point out, because you raised it, Chief Justice Sutter, the prior transaction is no evidence of notice of expectation of payment. It dealt with a completed transaction. And that's the disconnect. They're wanting the same amount of money or the same type of damage for just sending the email that they would have sought or hoped to recover by completing a transaction. That's benefit of the bargain damage. They don't really dispute that a gross profit brokerage fee is covered by the statute of frauds. It depends on two transactions involving the sale of oil and gas leases. That's covered by the statute of frauds. And a gross profit brokerage fee is a commission. You can't, you know, you just can't use semantics to change the fact that what they're seeking is a commission. That's covered by the statute of frauds. The statute of frauds applies to any non-contract claim seeking benefit of the bargain damages otherwise barred by the statute. The focus is on the nature of the damage. We've cited the court to the Quigley case, the Haas versus Glasner case, the Sinaixon case. In each of those cases, the Supreme Court applied the statute of frauds to a non-contract claim, even though there was no oral agreement between the parties. That rule also applies to prohibit a plaintiff from recovering quantum merit damages that would be directly barred by the statute. We've cited the court to a myriad of cases. Appellants only rely on quantum merit cases that predate the statute of frauds. The Cook versus City of Plano case explains the purpose of the law, and that is that a plaintiff can't recover indirectly under quantum merit because the court would be judicially legislating a cause of action that the legislature has denied. And that's what they're asking this court to do. The trial court refused to legislate from the bench. There is no fact issue precluding summary judgment on the quantum merit damages. We've cited the Quigley case, the Hill case, the LTS group case. Evidence that is barred by the statute of frauds is no evidence of the reasonable value of services or materials for quantum merit. Their only purported evidence is Taylor's conclusory statement that the average gross profit brokerage fee was $637.50 an acre. Not only is that conclusory, but again, it is a gross profit brokerage fee for completing a transaction. He testified about all the services that they would provide in order to earn that gross profit brokerage fee. They would negotiate and obtain leases from landowners. That didn't happen. They would package the leases up and sell them as one package to Lone Star. That didn't happen. They would reach an agreement on the price that Lone Star would pay to buy the leases. That didn't happen. They would provide title work and curative title work. That didn't happen. None of that happened. But that appellants seek the same amount just for sending the email that they would as they would for performing all of those other services and completing the transaction shows that they're seeking benefit of the bargain damages.
What was the course of dealing between the parties on the other transaction? Was the brokerage fee that was earned and is referenced, was that done? Were the services that you say are not covered by the confidentiality agreement, but those are the additional purchasing, the lease, that type of thing, were all those done pursuant to the contemplated future agreement, or were those services that would ordinarily done pursuant to the confidentiality agreement? Was there a previous confidentiality agreement that had entered into vis-a-vis, or was this the only confidentiality
agreement? As I understand it, this is the confidentiality agreement that covered the other transaction, but it just had a time limit. But the and that does tie in to the second point that they can't recover for quantum merit for services and materials that were covered under an existing agreement. I'm not trying to avoid your question. I think the record is very sparse about the circumstances of the prior transaction, other than it includes a copy of the actual definitive agreement that Lone Star and Giant entered into in order for that transaction to take place. But their admissions prove
that with that agreement, or if you remember, does that agreement set forth the services that they're now claiming are covered under quantum merit? We enter into this future agreement, okay, based upon the confidentiality agreement, and we have an Exhibit A that we've attached, and it's part of this future agreement, and as part of this agreement, Giant will do X, Y, and Z, okay, which we were not obligated to do under the confidentiality agreement, but we are under this future agreement.
Yeah. I think the process would be Giant would introduce a property, and if Lone Star is interested, what the confidentiality agreement requires is that they both sign the Exhibit A, and then it becomes a quote-unquote transaction. Then, as Justice Wallach noted, there's still no obligation until the parties reach the next step of reaching a definitive agreement about the terms of the transaction. And so in that prior instance, that would have happened. I do think the agreement does outline obligations and responsibilities of Giant in closing the transaction, warranty stuff. I don't know if it specifically addresses title work and that sort of thing, but it's taking a transaction to the next step of actually being closed, in which Giant would acquire leases and then turn around and assign them to Lone Star. None of that happened here. They just sent the email. Under tab 3 of the handout, under the first bullet point, the purpose of the confidentiality agreement was to facilitate Lone Star's evaluation and the potential acquisition of properties introduced by Giant. Under bullet points 2, 3, and 4, they admit that the email and the map were sent pursuant to the terms of the confidentiality agreement. That negates a quantum merit claim. Their only argument is that, well, the terms of the confidentiality agreement did not allow them to be compensated if no transaction was completed. But that's what they agreed to. If Giant had wanted to be compensated, even if a transaction was not completed, it should have bargained for that. But the fact that it didn't does not mean that the email and Google Map were not provided under that existing written agreement. They admit that it was. And as Chief Justice Southworth has written and the court has held, parties are bound by the terms of their agreements, whether good or bad, wise or foolhardy. As a matter of law, the email was sent pursuant to an existing contract, and that negates a quantum merit claim. Next point, an expectation of a future transaction cannot form the basis of a quantum merit claim. Under tab 4 of the handout, the first two bullet points, appellants admit the email and map were furnished with the expectation of reaching a future agreement in which Giant would acquire the leases and sell them to Lone Star as a single package. The third bullet point, in that contemplated future transaction, Giant expected to earn a gross profit brokerage fee from completing the transaction. Giant conclusively furnished the email and the map not to receive direct compensation for doing that, but with the expectation that there would be a future transaction. That negates a quantum merit claim. Briefly, under tab 5, I want to just point out that under the record, under the evidence, appellees did not improperly use the information. The only evidence is that appellees did not use it. The evidence is that Eagleford engaged an independent broker to try to get a lease on the Pagel property. The Pagel property was not included in the email and the map. Giant never even talked to the Pagels. Gutierrez never talked to the Pagels. But that, obtaining the Pagel lease, then led through that broker's discussions with Pagel's lawyer to acquiring the other leases. I'd also point out under the first bullet point, under subparagraph C and D, the trial court excluded appellant's conclusory statements that Lone Star accepted or used the information, and excluded the statements that Lone Star would not have known about the availability of the property. They don't make any complaint on appeal about the trial court's exclusion of that evidence. They admit that we already had reviewed the acreage before the email was ever sent. Under the confidentiality agreement, Lone Star had no obligation regarding information in the public domain. and tab 5 shows where the releases of the leases were already a public record. One of the releases had been filed over a year before Giant sent the email. The last bullet point, even if there was improper use, Giant's sole remedy under the confidentiality agreement was a breach of contract claim. That's what they agreed to. They have never asserted breach of contract because it wasn't breached. The summary judgment should be affirmed.
Thank you.
Like to pick up on the last couple points Mr. Barton made. Although Lone Star was generally aware of this acreage, Lone Star was not aware until May of 2015 when Giant Resources told Lone Star that acreage was available for lease and the landowners were ready, willing, and able to lease that acreage. And viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to Giant Resources appellants, a reasonable jury could conclude that Lone Star had no knowledge about the availability of this acreage until the joint venture confidentially disclosed that information to Lone Star on May 2015. So that it's our view, and I think the evidence supports this, that Giant Resources was the procuring cause of why Lone Star was able to acquire these leases, and it's at least a disputed fact issue on this.
Is there any clarification with regard to the map?
Yeah, I was going to address that. A Google map, as we all know, just shows the where the highways are and everything else. There is some information that's overlaid upon that you can see. That's the well names, the Ruddock and the Witten well names. But there's another email. It's not just based on this one email. There's another email that Mr. Taylor sent to them and says, we have control over this acreage. We can get released.
What does that mean? What does control mean?
That they had already signed. Mr. Gutierrez had these landowners under a representation agreement. That's what that means. We had control of this acreage, and we can get releases and provide this acreage to you. I think at that time it was 1,700 acres. So that was there. There's not just this one little email. There's a subsequent email after that that shows additional confidential information was provided under the confidentiality agreement. Now, going to your point, Justice Wallach, about whether this express contract bars the quantum merit claim, this confidentiality agreement only covered the exchange of confidential information. It's like a non-disclosure agreement. It didn't cover anything else, zero. It didn't cover about what would happen if they were to provide this information, the amount of the brokerage fee that would be charged or not be charged. It did not provide for Giant Resources a right to sue under that contract for any materials or services that were provided. It just was a standard non-disclosure agreement in this industry to disclose prospects. So under the express contract rule requires that the contract cover the cause of action or the damages that are sought to be provided or sought to be claimed in the case, and therefore the express contract rule does not apply in this case. Now, on the expectation of future business opportunity that was touched on by Mr. Barton, the joint venture is only seeking just compensation for past services and materials provided to Lone Star. It's not hoping for or expecting some future or business opportunity with Lone Star. And so that is incorrect as well.
Are you arguing that entering into the joint venture with Gutierrez, you were actually providing services to Lone Star in obtaining control of these leases?
Well, that was certainly part of the activities that these two, Giant Resources and Gutierrez did, was form this joint venture to go market this property that they had pooled together and controlled, and a very hot play down in the down near San Antonio to go pitch this property as they do in the normal course of their business to other people. And the other question on Quantum Merit is, how did Lone Star benefit from this? It wasn't that they just provided this information to them and it didn't went nowhere. It went into a file. No, Lone Star went out and leased that property 5 days after the confidentiality, or 6 days after the confidentiality expired. And they have benefited that because they put wells on that property. And they've not disclosed to us what they've earned on that property. We asked for a request for production on that. They've not disclosed yet what they've earned on that property. But, there was a conferred benefit, and that's one of the requirements of a quantum merit claim, a conferred benefit, like your example, Justice Sutter, about mowing somebody's lawn or painting somebody's house or providing attorney's services or providing geological services. There is a benefit that was conferred. That's a disputed fact issue on that. The question is whether those damages being sought are benefit of the bargain damages or usual and customary brokerage fees that are typically charged by brokers in this area in 2015. The undisputed evidence is that that's the amount of damages we're seeking. The benefit of the bargain damages that we would not be allowed to seek would be what we asked for or got in the last deal, which was $1,875 an acre. That's benefit of the bargain damages.
So was there just one previous
relationship
between these two parties?
Yes, sir. I see my time's up. Thank you very much. Enjoyed it. Thank you. Oh, I do have one point of correction. I found a typo in my brief, and I discussed with Mr. Barton beforehand. I'd like to provide additional citation on page 27 of the brief to a record site that was accidentally dropped off. If I may have permission to just file a short letter adding that additional citation.
And you're agreeable to this? So just do that by way of letter.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen, we appreciate your argument here today. It's been very helpful to us. Your case has been submitted, and you're now free to go about your business. Thank you.